Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of PodNuts Pro. This is show number 87. I am Marvin B., and I am joined by the incredulous Matthew Rainey.
Hello. Welcome. I'm doing super fantastic awesome, by the way.
Oh, that sounds a little bit over the top there.
No. It's we'll accurate. It's accurate.
And one of the Incredibles, Martin Obando. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. Finally, end of a cold, trying to get through it. I'm leaving on a little bit of vacation tomorrow, so I'm just willing myself not to have any more sickness.
All right. So were you way past Robitussin, or are you?
It's a couple of little bit of NyQuil. I stood out in the rain all day Saturday, and it was cold.
Were you punished, or just...
No, I was helping out.
It was the band thing, right?
Yeah.
So you finally took us up on singing in the rain.
I was holding a prop in the rain. I wasn't really singing, but but I want to know which Incredible I am. Like, because there's the dad, there's the kid, there's the little girl. I don't know.
We'll
or was it just that? That's a suspense.
Yeah. We'll stretch that out as much as we can.
And how are you doing today, Mark? Yes.
I'm doing pretty good. Back and rested. I had a nice long trip yesterday. I had to travel across the state to do a installation. And today is a rest day, and I'll be traveling again tomorrow.
Nice. So you didn't work today. Nice rest day, huh?
No, I worked. I just worked mostly in the office.
I call that short and t-shirt day.
That's every day for me. That's what I wear.
No, you guys from Louisiana. Good grief. I'm surprised you... Never mind.
Although I might have to wear pants tomorrow because it might be a little chilly tomorrow.
It's going to get to, what, 72? Brr.
That is the high, probably 70, 71. But the low's like in the low 50s. I might wear pants tomorrow.
All right. I think it maybe reached 50. Well, it's 60 right now, so...
And I'm going to hear about it from everybody saying, oh, my God. People say you can't wear jeans and a t-shirt. Well, I wear shorts and a t-shirt, but... I sit in the office all day long and do remote work and sit by my desk. I don't really see clients, so it's one of my benefits.
I have a bad habit. I get up and actually will put on pants and a shirt and with the anticipation that I'm going to go somewhere, that if a customer needs me, I am ready to go.
See, I have a change of clothes if I need to go on site, but it's rare I need to go on site. So I could change and then go on site.
So like, you're like
Superman, right? He doesn't always wear his Superman outfit. He changes into that.
No, I think he wears a Superman outfit all the time under his clothes.
It's under his clothes, yeah.
No, he's so just so should, fast. That was
so
only
no,
for show.
So you need to wear like a tie under that shirt.
I said like him in a sense that he doesn't. It's not what you see all the time.
Oh, I get it. Right. I'm with you there, Marvin. I'll get up and I'll get dressed for the day. Dockers, polo shirt and everything like that. And I got to mentally get ready for work because sometimes I got to... When I work from my house, you know, and I'm with you, you know, I expected to come home this afternoon and I end up not. I ended up in another state, so a physical state, not a state of mind, just in case anybody else was going to go towards that.
All right. So let's see. What have we got to talk about this evening? I'll start and I will give you guys an update on my deal registration process that for the last 2 weeks I have been not complaining, but reporting about that it finally got approved. And it still took a day for the approval to get from the vendor to my distributor so that I was actually literally cracking my knuckles and wringing my hands and calling my distributor saying, is it loaded yet? Are my prices loaded yet? And it happened about 4 something that they actually finally got loaded and I could get the order placed. But the good news is that I did save an additional $442.
Oh, see, there you go. It's worth it.
But I just, I told them, I said, we've got to streamline this. I don't mind saving $442 with a day or two of work, not 2+ weeks.
Right. Hopefully it's more streamlined going forward.
Yeah. And since, you know, the company I was dealing with was SonicWall, now that they're separate from Dell, hopefully that'll make things go a little bit better.
It's always good to hope.
Yeah. Hope is good.
hope is very good.
So, So that's my big update for the week. What about you guys?
I'll throw one out there. I had a job customer called me and said, and it's going to be confusing because it was confusing to me when she said it. She said, "Hey, I'm ready if you ought to come connect all the cables that we ran." And
wait. Is this that customer that called you to do all that work and you said the first thing you got to do is change out the cables?
No. I do have an update on them, though. I'll get to. This is a different one. So I said, "Okay, what cables are you talking about?" And she says, "Well, didn't y'all run them?" I said, "Well, if we ran them, we would have connected them when we ran them. What are you talking about?" "Well, I thought y'all ran them." I said, "I don't know what you're talking about. We didn't run any cables at your office." So she goes, "Well, I have a ticket from y'all that says y'all were going to run them." I said, "Okay, what's the ticket number?" She gives me the ticket number. I read it, and it says, and this is from 3 months ago, they called to tell us that their electrician was going to run cables and that they were going to call us when he ran them so we can come terminate them. I said, "Well, did you read the ticket or did you just look at the headline, network cables?" "Oh, I just looked at the headline." I said, "Well, read what you wrote in your email to us." "Oh, okay. Well, I guess he ran them." I said, "Okay, well, that's what I understood when you first called and said we ran cables." Anyway, I said, "Okay, how many cables did you run?" "I don't know," she says. "Great." So she took a picture. She sent me a few pictures of the...
Sorry, I just... this is... Go ahead.
So one picture I get is an outlet in the floor. You know, like in a house, you might have electrical outlet in the floor because you don't want your lamp having to go all the way to the wall. It was one of those in the floor. And it was hardwood floor everywhere. And somebody cut a hole in the hardwood floor and the cables were all coming out of that. That was
like in a flower formation?
It was a mess. It was almost like I took 10 cables and shoved them into the hole. That's what it looked like. I said, "Okay." The next picture was just three regular wall boxes with cables coming out of those, each one with varying amounts of cable. Some had two, some had more, and it was a whole mess. I said, "Okay, you don't know how many he ran?" "No, we don't know." I said, "Okay, let's go to the switch and let's make sure you have enough, how many ports you have in the switch available." So I walk her through finding the switch, and it's a 52-port switch. This is somebody we took over. I said, "Okay, well, how many are open?" She counted, 15. "Okay, well, you're good. If you have 15 or less, you're good." I said, "But in here, you should see all the cables coming in here. They should be all loose hanging down, right? Because if you ran them in here, that's what there should be for me to terminate them." I said, "How many cables? Do you see the cables?" "Yeah, I see them." "How many? Let's count them on this side then. How many do you count?" "Two." I said, "Two? You see
there's a switch somewhere in the wall."
I said, "Two, you see we have a problem here, right?" She says, "Yeah, that doesn't seem right." I said, "No, it doesn't seem right. So here's what you need to do. You need to call your electrician back. You need to ask him where he ran the cables to. Because if he ran 15, there should be 15 in here." And then she asked me about faceplates. Well, one, I don't know how big that round hole he cut was. I said, "Just have him bring his faceplates. Whatever he did, have him bring the faceplates when he fixes the cabling." Okay. She called me back the next day. "Okay, he said he ran them all in a loop."
Oh.
Which makes sense, right? That's why you have two. The start here and the end here. And that's also why the picture showed me had varying amounts of cable, like it was stuffed in it. Because he just had a whole bunch extra shoved back in the wall. And I guess the closest one had the most. And then the further away it got, the least it had, right? I don't know, but that's what he did. I said, "Okay, so you need to have him rerun everything." And this is new construction addition. He ran the cabling when there was no walls, no ceiling, no walls. I said, "Well, now he's got to redo everything. So once you have him run it," and I explained to her that if it's going to go in the wall here, it needs to go all the way back to the switch, each one. So that was done. She calls me. He's done. So I sent one of my guys out there, and he ran more cables, but he left all the ones in the loop. So he added to each mess of wires shoved into that box, he left them. So my guy had to tone them all out and figure out which ones are a loop, which one is a home, is running back to the... In the end, there was six cables, and then a mess of other cable shoved into the wall that was a loop. That was a mess. Anyway, I thought it was funny. It's a loop. I said, does this electrician know that he's running computer cables, you know, for network? He said, yes. Well, I think we need to train him a little bit better on how to run network cabling.
Yeah.
So you said this was new construction addition, so they didn't pull permits for that?
I don't ask that. That's not my department. That's not my department.
It's not my job, man.
I'm right there with you, Matt.
I'm going to assume that they ran them correctly, and I'm just going to have to go terminate them. I don't get into it. I call that the minutia.
That's weird, because you know what? I used to be like that and not care, but I can't do that anymore. We tell them if they want to run their own cables, I need to meet the cable guy or the electrician.
When that phone call that we took, that they were telling us that they were running, I wasn't even there. I didn't know they called, but had they, for me, if I would have talked to him, I would have said, let me talk to him before he runs it. And I probably would have avoided it. But this is one client who thinks they know everything and thinks they don't need to tell anybody and they got it under control. But they did. And now it's a mess. And I told her, this looks like expensive wood flooring. If he brings the faceplates, we'll pop the keystone into the faceplate, but I'm not drilling into your wood floor. Y'all can do that. I'm sorry.
Bring a glue gun with you.
I said, I'm not going to attach it. I'll pop them in, and then your construction guys can screw it in, because I'm not going to have a board split or something happen, and then you tell me it's my fault that we have to fix the floor. So I'll let him connect that faceplate as needed. Anyway, it's a new construction. It'd be nice if it was all nice and clean and not an extra cable, but that didn't happen apparently. And it took a lot longer because he had to figure out which cables went where. So, and the update for the other one, I got the go-ahead. So we went out there for the cabling, to fix the cabling first, and then one that wanted the server with no passwords.
Right, yeah.
So we got to go ahead for the cabling. We went up there. You know, everything tested at Gigabit. We had a few open pins, a few cross pins, fixed all that, everything tested out at Gigabit. So then she says, well, what's the next step? And I said, well, the next step is to order the equipment, the server and the equipment. Okay, go ahead. I said, okay. If you read the quote, it says we require, once we receive payment, we'll order the equipment. So if you want to bring me a check, bring it to me. If you want to mail it to me, mail it to me. But whenever we get payment, we'll order the equipment. And in past conversations, they were questioning this $3 charge and this $30 charge. And they seem real nitpicky about even very small, minor issues among the quote. And she says, well, can we pay half now and half later? Well, I'm thinking, it's a new client. I don't know them. I don't know if they're going to be slow pay. So a new customer policy is you prepay for equipment. So I told her, no, it's our policy to prepay for equipment. And she says, well, can you have it shipped to us then? If that makes you feel better. I said, yeah, we can. Just whenever you get it, bring it to us because we have to configure it.
Yep.
Or I can send a tech to come pick it up, but that'll be an hour minimum to send a tech to come pick it up. Oh, well, I guess you could ship it to y'all. I said, okay. So we'll just submit payment and we'll order it. Well, I'll have to get it by the boss to see if he'll approve that. And I told her, well, here's a problem. When we order it, we have to pay for it. I can't pay my vendor half now and half later. I have to pay for it all. So if you don't want to pay for it, I got to pay for it. And we don't do that. I said, if you ordered it from Dell or HP directly, they're not going to ship it to you until you pay for it. It's the same thing. We're not going to order it until you pay for it. And that was a week and a half ago. They haven't called back. So I really don't care if they do or not, because people like that, if they're going to nitpick. And she wanted to do pay half up front, half on delivery. I told her from the time we ordered, it might be a week, week and a half to delivery. So I don't know why they want to pay half now and then half in 10 days. So what do y'all do for new equipment? For new customers? Because we don't do that for customers have a relationship with. We'll order equipment without payment, no problem. But for new clients that we don't know what their payment's like, we require hardware costs up front.
That's what I do. I mean, new customers, at least in terms of anything hardware or item related, they pay for all of that. We may not charge them for the labor up front, but if we order them a server or a Datto, they pay for the full thing up front. And then our existing customers, depending on, you know, you get credit for good behavior. So the good customers may, you know, 50% down, 50% on delivery. I've even got one customer where we did a third down, a third on setup, and then a third, you know, once we were done. But they were, you know, they're good customers. But, you know, if you're on bad behavior, no, you pay everything up front, and we might even make some, you know, the debate for us was to make them pay by credit card, but then I realized it's so easy for them to stop, you know, dispute a charge,
right,
or stop a check. So it's, you know, basically I tell them, if we got to run a credit check on you, you're paying everything up front.
Yep.
So we'll see the callback.
Yeah. Yep. Depends then, on the... Okay.
I was going to say, and then to fight against that, if you have a slow pay, one trip to collections will either fix them or lose them.
And they were complaining about, what, I quoted them a SmartUps 1500 for the battery backup of the server. And she says, we found a battery backup for $200 at wherever. I'm like, great. If it's a SmartUps, APC SmartUps 1500, let me know where it is. I'll go buy a whole bunch of them too for $200. Is it an APC Smart UPS 1500? Oh, I don't know what it was. Yeah, well, I guarantee you it was an APC Smart UPS 1500. Guaranteed.
Yeah, and sorry.
Oh, and so things like that. She said, well, we have Norton. Can we put Norton on the server? I said, well, you have Norton for a workstation. It's not going to work on the server. You have to buy a corporate edition. So no, you can't do that. Anyway, and then they wanted to pay half up front, half later. So if they don't call back, I'm not really concerned about it. I don't even know who referred them to us, really. But I'm not holding my breath for them.
What were you going to say, Obando?
Oh, just, you know, with clients, it depends on the clients. It depends on the cost. Some things I'll put up front, and depending on the cost. But most of my clients are pretty good at it. If it gets too big, then they'll just purchase it. They'll ship it to them or ship to me. But I do have some clients, or one client that was referred to me because they weren't very responsive, and I'm finding them not being very responsive, and we're doing a big move for them on this weekend. That's one of my stories. But I billed them for the parts, and they wrote me a check. So I actually have already cashed a check that was just invoiced to them 9 days ago. So I was like, wow, that's they paid me faster than my other ones, even though they're not very responsive of getting back to me in a timeline, so we know what we're doing on Sunday when we have to shut a network down and move the whole network to a new building. But they'll pay me on time, so you know, I'll chalk that up to a win.
Yeah, new clients, if I'm doing a big product, I might even pre-bill them some hours. But until they have a history of paying on time, I'm leery about that stuff.
Well, this customer's been with me for almost a year. We're just now, they've been pretty quiet. They really haven't needed a whole lot of stuff. But now we're moving into a new section. So,
and you're doing this weekend?
Yeah. So that's my Thursday is, or excuse me, my Sunday is shutting the network down. They're going to move the computers and stuff coming up here. We're moving the server and the rack. So we had an electrician. I met with their electrician a couple weeks ago. He's certified. He made sure he got all the permits, and he's pulling everything. He's going to move I'm going to pull everything out of the rack. He's got tools for the rack. He's going to move the rack over. He's going to lock the rack back down through the floor, and then we're putting everything back. He's going to do the punch down on the wall plates, and we'll put everything back in place.
They're moving to a new building, new ISP.
Yep, they're going from a bonded T1 to a Comcast connection. So
are they hosting any services on their server?
No,
that's nice and easy then.
Yeah. The problem is that their Sonic wall needs to get changed out. One way or another, whether we go with the other Sonic wall or not, their Sonic wall has expired. So I mentioned we need to change this out and get something new. And they kind of drug their feet, and now we're at the point where it's like, well, it's too late now, so we'll move the old Sonic wall and figure out what to do next.
Is that Sonic wall one of the ones that's coming up to end of life? Like a 100 series or 200 series?
Give me a moment. I will let you know. So talk amongst yourself.
Yeah, well, because that was actually my deal registration. It was to replace several 200s and NSA 240 and... what SonicWall did was they were supposed to all be end of life this year, but they extended it. And what they're doing, I don't know exactly when end of life is now. I think it was sometime in 2017. But after they extended it, they raised the renewal for the services 30%.
So it's cheaper to buy a new one than it is to...
Well, yeah, and I actually, for another customer, I just sent out a quote because he's got a, you know, TZ100. And I had quoted him, you know, the Sonic wall price, and then I could get it to him for like $30 less. So I got the renewal notice again for the 14-day notice on Tuesday. So I went to go place the order yesterday and saw 30%. So even my cost was higher than the original Sonic wall cost. But when I looked at they have a secure upgrade program where you can, you know, buy a new router and get 2 years of services bundled in. And basically, you know, he's going to save like 20% buying new than he would to renew.
Got it. Yeah, this is a TZ 210.
210, okay.
So, but then, so I mentioned about moving, you know, we need to fix this, we need to get it adjusted. And they said, well, let me look. And so then they ended up going to their corporate office because they're a franchise. They go to the corporate office, and the corporate office says, oh, no, you should use this. She says, I don't know what that is. And I said, well, you need to call them and find out what they are, because when I was looking at it, it almost sounded like a managed service that this company provides for corporate. I don't know if it's a software installation, if it's a hardware installation, if it's, you know. And she says, I don't know. And she just shrugged her feet. And now we're at this position of she doesn't know what she – and I'm like, well, it's too late now, and I'm going on vacation. So we're going to just transfer everything over, and we'll cross that bridge when, you know, we'll hit that up after we get you back up and running. So that's not part of my contract, just to make sure that I called them. Because I said, call the people locally. Call the other corporations, that are, you know, the franchises, and see what they're using. Because, you know, as a franchise owner, they have some leeway, but they don't have all the leeway. And I think some of the leeway includes network equipment, but she doesn't know, and she doesn't really care. And so when I go and I ask her some stuff, she's like, I don't know. That's a response. I'm not a computer person. Like, okay.
Well, but she should have documentation on what's accepted. I mean, I've done work with franchises before, and there is some sort of mandate. Yes, you have some leeway, but your leeway is to choose between A, B, or C. You can't just go out and pick whatever you want because it's got to match up. So I wonder if, you know, she's got to have a book somewhere that she just hasn't read, or
she doesn't seem too motivated to find it.
You know, no, I think that's part of it is motivation. This was one of these jobs where I was called in June and they said, we're going to move because they're going to tear the building down in 3 months. I said, okay, not a problem. Let me know. Let's get things moving. Okay. She calls me and says, these are the dates I have to move. And I'm like, I'm out of town these 3 days. We're going to have to push it to December. She says, I can't do it. I'm like, well, I don't know what to do. So I had to adjust my schedule because it was very last minute of like, oh, yeah, they're ripping the building down now. I'm like, well, you could have told me that a while ago. So it's just some frustration with this one client. But we're moving them on Sunday. We'll get them all up and running, and we'll figure it out from there.
So here's a question. Did she have a place to move to?
Yes. She has a place to move to.
So she took care of that. Just
oh yeah, but everything else was like, we'll figure it out if the network gets moved, like during construction, during demolition, when the pick
through the rubble.
Exactly. If you can find that server, that'd be great in that rubble. Like,
did she line up her ISP at the new place?
Oh yeah, that's all done.
Usually that's what they forget to do. They're moving it tomorrow, and I ask them, did you get your ISP? Oh, am I supposed to do that? Well, only if you want service there.
Right. Well, that's what I called her. I had to call her this week and say, we need to talk. I had a list. Okay. Is the network guy going to be done? He said he's going to be done on Sunday sometime. I'm like, no, I need him done before Sunday so we can move stuff in there on Sunday and I can hook your network back up because you want to be open on Monday. You know, is the ISP done? Yes. What time on Sunday are we meeting? I don't know. Okay. Are you going to be able to meet us there? I think so. If not, there's a lockbox in the back you can open up. I'm like... Okay, and then, you know, what about the main server major upgrade that you want to do for this one product? Yeah, I probably should call them and get that rolling.
it sounds like if they're down, she probably won't even care.
Well, they've been running Windows XP on 3 machines because it works better with this printing company, something, I don't know what it is, but...
She probably doesn't know either.
Well, she's like, well, we're not going to upgrade. I'm like, well, you need to upgrade. Well, but that's expensive. I'm like, but, you know, so is having XP machines on your network, and they don't work, and you guys aren't working, like, it's a mess. Having Windows 7, getting going in there, redoing the domain, it's going to be better. I'm looking forward to having it just work.
If she waits long enough, she won't be able to get Windows 7.
Yeah. Well, I have 3 Windows 7 boxes out there. I have 6 boxes sitting outside my wall right now.
Did you prepay for those for them?
Those were prepaid, but she sent me a check already. So she's dragging her feet, but then she'll send me a check in 3 days for a couple grand. And I'm like, well, whatever.
Hey, as long as she's not dragging her feet on that part.
I called her. She said, checks in the mail. I'm like, that's not what I'm calling you about. I have a net 30 term. I want to know if the electrician's pulling wires still.
At least she's concerned with the money. That's nice.
You know, I have one client right now that I'm like, are you going to pay? He's like, well, I'm waiting on a check from, I'm like, okay, you know,
I'll take that as a no.
Yeah, and, we're gonna take the, You said you were going to pay me a couple months ago, and this was a lesson that I had to learn kind of the hard way, and I hope other people learn. It's the whole when you're in small business, the friends rule of like, I'm going to help you, but I'll give you a little leeway, and then your friends don't pay, and then now it's how do you
people don't pay?
Yeah, so
that's where one of my rules come in. I can either be your friend or your computer guy. I can't be both.
Well, one guy's leaving because his company was bought out. So, all right. And the other guy, we actually had to just send him a letter. We're going to shut off your server. And oh, lo and behold, a big check showed up. I'm like, I don't want to threaten you. I don't want to tell you that I have to shut down your stuff before you don't pay me.
Yeah. Got to add late fees and penalties.
Yeah.
But I once had a customer try to tell me, we don't pay late fees.
If you don't pay late, correct. You don't pay late fees.
I said, so when your rent is late, they don't charge you extra? Oh, well, they do, yes. Well, you just paid me late, so there's a late fee. We don't want to pay late fees, but then don't pay late.
Right. I have a solution for that. Don't pay late. Now, if I could say, okay, yeah, that's fine. I'll waive the late fee. By the way, my labor charge went up 10%.
This is more than a yes-no question.
So from now on, if it was $100 an hour, now it's $110 an hour. So going forward, my rate's $110 an hour.
Yeah. The other way to do that is just, you did raise your rate. And I've had somebody say, well, I don't want to pay this. And I'm like, fine, I'll just roll it in somewhere else.
I'll just overcharge you somewhere else.
Yeah, I'm $10 an hour. And yes, that was a $400 network card. No, that cable's made of actual gold. It's $300 a foot.
Yeah, don't scrape it off. Don't scrape your finger off with it.
So on the topic of small business, I got a request over the weekend from our good friend John Dubinsky, and I am allowed to use his name. He did give me permission. Wanted to ask a question about DHCP scopes. And he's got a client where he's running out of IP addresses. And we talked about how to handle that and what to do. And even though I've got some pretty large networks, I haven't come close to running out of IP addresses. And most of that is because we use either OpenMesh or Ruckus, and anything that comes in on the Wi-Fi is segmented out to a different network. And the customers where we have IP phones, they're VLAN, so that those phones are on a different network. So I have, most of the time, less than 100 devices on a network at a time. But we discussed the fact that, some places you have everything on one network, where if you, add a wireless access point, it's basically segmented to the same network. And if you bring in IP phones from some of the smaller VoIP companies where, they'll send you the phone in the mail and all you got to do is plug it in and it's going to grab an IP address from your network. So you've got computers, phones, mobile devices, everything grabbing an IP address. So we talked about that a little bit. So I figured I'll bring that to the show here and see what you guys do in those situations in terms of how do you plan for it ahead of time. If you, if you're going to take a company that is going to grow at some point, how far ahead do you plan for situations like an expanding DHCP scope?
We had this happen to a client 2 weeks ago. They ran out of IP addresses. So what we did was what you said. We segmented all their wireless access points to a different network. Now all the phones and tablets get different IPs in a different subnet that's managed through the WatchGuard on a different network. But that's the nice part, because most times when you see this thing is going over the limit, that's what it is, right? It's phones, it's tablets, and a lot of times it's a long lease time too, 8 days, right? Or something long. You can shorten that if it's people come in and out. That'll free up a lot of space as well. I mean, I don't know if you know any specifics on his situation, but I had to do it once. And we just bit the bullet. We just changed the DHCP scope. It was on a 192.168. We just changed it to 172.16.whatever, subnet mask 255.255.0.0. Let everybody reboot, grab the new IP, and we had to go change a few printers, reservations. It took a few hours, and that was probably a 200 people in the network, and it took a couple of hours. It wasn't that bad. But when you're planning for growth, if they have 100 people, you shouldn't be going with a Class C address anyway. 192.168. That's too many. If they have 10 or 20, yeah, you could do a Class C. But more than that, I would just start them off with something like a 172.16 network.
So what that also happened to me, this was before we put a WatchGuard router in. This was a school. They were fairly small, but then in their growth, they went one-to-one with Chromebooks. They went, they brought in iPads. They had computer labs. So they ended up growing, but the network was already a 192.168.1 network. With a slash, with a 255.255.254, or 255, excuse me. So it was a slash 24. So the foundation was already laid. And as they grew, we did run out of IP addresses. So what I ended up having to do was make them a slash 23. So that's a 255.255.254, which then gave them the scope of 192.168.0.1 through 192.168.1.255. And then we had to go back in, redo, the printers, put them back on the zero. I move them from the ones to zero. So that's how I just logically put all my stuff. The servers, the printers, the routers, the switches. And then we were able to expand our DHCP scope. It took a little bit of planning, but overall, I think I had it done within, you know, a couple hours. You had to reboot everything. It's definitely an after hours thing. But even shortening up the lease time, at that time, what was happening is everybody was getting IP addresses through their wireless. There wasn't any segmenting of the networks. So they would have meetings after hours, and those people would get IP addresses. I did shorten up the lease time, but it just we were having so many devices come in that I couldn't, even with the short lease time, even with a lease time of a couple hours, I wasn't able to keep up with the influx. And so we had to readjust our network. And that's just what we did. We ended up, now we have a WatchGuard, so now I can make that change later on down the line. But we've also gone to Open Mesh, and so now the Chromebooks are on their own network. We have other devices on their own network. So now we've actually, even though we've expanded our DHCP scope, we've actually taken a lot of pressure off by installing Open Mesh and moving some devices to certain things. But we had to do the same thing.
Now, in the migration we had to do to a new DHCP scope, I did lower to 1 hour lease time. That way, if I didn't make it to everybody's computer, they grab a new lease without me doing anything.
Yeah. That is, I mean, anytime you make a change to the DHCP scope, I usually will adjust it to 15 minutes and then let it sit throughout the whole lease time. So that way it's sitting and it's ready to go. And it's by the time that it's doing everybody at 15 minutes, now I'll go and make the DHCP change. And then everybody gets the new one within 15 minutes. And then I'll go back and readjust it again.
Now, with the WatchGuard, let's say we're switching from a 192.168 network to a 172 network, about 16. So the WatchGuard, what you can do is add a secondary network. So you would make the WatchGuard, tell the WatchGuard that your primary now is a 172.16 address network. But on the same interface, you can add a secondary network of 192.168.whatever. So if you haven't gotten to the printers yet, or you haven't gotten to some of the computers that might have static IP for some reason, they'll still work because the network's aware of both networks. So the sure. if this guy has 192.168 address, he tries to communicate, he'll go, and he tries to communicate with a 172 network, it's going to go to his default gateway. Default gateway for him is now the secondary network on the router, and the router knows what to do with it. It sends it back where it needs to go. So that's a way to change your scope and not have anybody down while you're doing it, is the secondary network.
For John, I think it depends on what the foundation already is, what's going to be the easiest based on what he already has in place. One of the things I learned is that a lot of routers, as soon as you put in a 192.168, it's going to do a slash 24, and I went ahead and went and left it. And I didn't realize it until a day or two later. I had half the people who could get on the network and half the people who couldn't, because half the people were in the right subnet where it could get out, and the other half couldn't transpose the other subnet. And then I fixed that, and then found that, you know, some problems with that. But I think it really depends on what the foundation currently is. Depends, in my opinion, depends on what's the best step to go and how to make the change. It may be, adding another subnet in a firewall. It may be completely just redoing the whole DHCP scope altogether in room for growth.
Yeah, we talked about all of that and pretty much all those options change in the least time, and that would give him, you know, free up some stuff, because it was mainly where, you know, leases were held but not in use. And so shortening the lease time mm-hmm. took care of a lot of that. And we talked about segmenting all the wireless devices with the open mesh. And I think, you know, the other thing that people have done with open mesh is when they bridge that first WAN, you know, external to the local network, so they get the same address, they don't take into consideration, not everybody needs to be bridged. So you have two SSIDs, you know, one for people that need it, and then the other for people that don't. And which is what I've done with all of my Wi-Fi customers. The wireless is pretty much always separate.
Right. Well, that's what we did at the school. We did that for our Chromebooks because we went one-to-one. So now we have 180 Chromebooks coming in and out of the school, and I put those on a separate network, and then we have Chromebook printers. And those, it doesn't matter as long as those printers can reach the internet and you do everything through the Chrome interface. I was able to offset a lot of my DHCP by putting the Chromebooks on a second SSID on the open mesh. So they're getting a 10 dot and they're just handling their own. They're getting out to the network. They're doing their thing. But yet when they go to print, it all transposes through the network and ends up at a 192.168 dot, you know, printer within a locally.
So a question I have is, I don't know, Obando, if you'll be able to answer this as much as Rainey, but you know, most of my customers have servers on site, and I do my DHCP and DNS from the server. I know that a lot of people love to do it actually from the firewall. So, Rainey, what do you do normally?
If there's a server running Active Directory, a DHCP and DNS on the server.
I had one client who had it on the firewall, and we moved it from the firewall router to the server. I will run it on the server at all my locations.
Yeah. Now, back to that one thing about the phones. I had one client, they were running out of IPs, and when I told them what was using the IPs, that it was all the phones, their solution was, we don't want to make any changes, and we don't want to create any cost to this. All these shop guys coming into work and having their phones connected, let's change the Wi-Fi password, and we're not going to give them the Wi-Fi password, and that'll knock all their phones off. That was their solution. They don't need to be on our Wi-Fi with their phones. That's their phones. It's not company phones.
Yeah. That's a valid solution.
So change the Wi-Fi password, gave it to a few of the key people who needed it, and that solved their problem. Easy enough.
How many shop guys were there?
Oh, most of them were shop guys.
I was going to say, that's a lot of people.
the office, well, they had three shifts, and in the office, there might have been 15, 20 people. The rest of them were shop hands filling up their Class C DHCP scope.
Were they also using an internet content filter, or were they just letting them, you know, stream their music on their phones?
They weren't doing anything. They could do whatever they wanted. So cut them off, fixed them right up for IP addresses.
Probably fixed a lot of other issues, too, with bandwidth.
Yeah. I mean, the shop guys mainly were, you know, I don't know if the gay guys did that because the machine's running pretty loud, but the night guys may have been killing the bandwidth, but the office staff doesn't care about nighttime people. So that was their solution. They don't need to connect their phones. So,
all right. So, DaVinci, if you're listening, you've now heard from the 3M group.
Yeah. But most importantly, one thing, if you're planning a network and they've got 50 people or more, just don't do a Class C light. The Class C scope. Move to Class B or A.
Yeah,
at least. Okay.
This goes back to even last week. Sorry, this goes back to last week. Of I had the VPN issue because of a Class C network. So even if it is less than 50 people, I would always choose to go to another IP address like a Class B, just because if you're VPNing, most of the people at home are going to have a Class C network with the IP address range.
Yep.
And then you end up with the IP address. Well, a Class C IP address.
Of the 192.1.something.
Right, because then we had that VPN conflict. So,
absolutely. But most of the Linksys routers default to 1.1.
Well, you can change it. I've done it. It's pretty easy.
Hard to change.
Oh, come on, Rainey.
Okay, so first of all, I should have a Linksys router in the business anyway. So let's.
Right. Oh, speaking of that, I have not heard back from the school that has all of those Ubiquiti access points that are running to a D-Link router, and they keep crashing. And I quoted them to come down and to replace them with a WatchGuard, and they said, we'll have to get back to you. So,
yeah, let them crash.
Translation, no.
Right.
Or we're going to find somebody else who can get our Linksys routers working, or D-Link router.
Right. Well, it's a two-hour drive for me one way to get there. So that's part of it. And then I'm on site, and I have no idea what the closet looks like and what their switches look like. And then it's like, and then we have to deploy this router. And they're like,
That's what I have to take pictures. Take pictures and send them to me.
Well, I was kind of feeling this out. It was one of those things. It was a friend of mine's son, and I kind of knew where it was going to go, but I wasn't quite sure. And I think I went when we quoted the price, we're going to go shop over here. All right. Good luck. I can't, you know.
Well, all these free things and cheap things in business brings up, I saw you posted something on social media, Martin, about the web of mistrust. Wait, web of trust.
Web of trust.
So what's going on with web of trust?
Well, I know just as much as you know, because I haven't had a chance to look into it too much. But I've used web of trust. Our good friend,
Mike Smith.
Thank you. I totally just lost his name. Mentions this all the time. I did reach out to Mike Smith, and I haven't listened to his latest show, but he was going to talk about it. So you probably know more than I do, but apparently they're selling data now.
Yeah, and it's non-anonymized. It can be traced back to the individual user.
Oh, my gosh.
So here's the problem, and I've never used Web of Trust. And there's a reason. I don't use free things for business that I support. If you're not a customer, you're the product. Free tools are free for a reason. They've got to make money somehow. You're the product. You're not the customer. So I've heard people say, we got to find a new free alternative for Web of Trust because they're selling our data. And I'm thinking, why would you want to replace one free thing with another free thing? They're going to do the exact same thing. There's a reason this stuff is free. If, in my opinion, if I want to filter traffic, I'm going to do it the right way, not necessarily a free way. That's how I do it. I don't like free things for business support. So I always hear, the client's not going to want to pay this. What's that?
And the church says amen.
And the client, the tech say, well, the client's not going to want to pay for it. Well, that's their choice. I'm going to quote them what they need, what's going to work good. I'm not going to quote them just because it's free. That drives me up a wall. I'm not going to recommend Gmail to somebody at a business. I'm not going to recommend Web of Trust. Personally, I'll use a WatchGuard with filtering. They have something called reputation-enabled defense. It'll, in the background, know if the site's good or not and just block it from going to it. It's not going to give you a little – it's a pet peeve. I see it all the time, free stuff in business support, and it's free for a reason, and it's usually not a good reason. So, another example, Web of Mistrust.
No, that's good. That's I've used Web of Trust on my computer. I have since removed it. Yeah, I guess it's another way of looking at it that
I saw a cartoon of these two pigs, and behind them it's a sign that says slaughterhouse. And one pig is telling the other one, this place is great. We have a nice place to sleep. They give us food all day long. This is awesome. Yeah, there's a reason they're getting free room and board and food. So led to the slaughter. That's my take on free stuff. I might get emails about it, but.
No, I think it's a good reminder. It's something that I need to practice myself. I'll be first to admit that I use things like uBlock Origin, and I had used Web of Trust at some clients where they're saying, "Well, what do I do about pop-ups?" Well, this is a great plugin that works well. I'm sad that, I guess now that I have to be reminded that, it's free for a reason. And that's a good learning lesson because now we've been bit by this product. And, now we just say, okay, we see what we did wrong. We change our ways and we move forward with it.
Hopefully. But hopefully changing the ways is not moving to the next free thing.
Right. Well, and that's our job, right? If we're their support, if we support them, then that's our job when they say, well, what do we do about content filtering? What do we do about, you know, so let's not do worry about pop-ups and add-ons and free stuff. Well, then we say, well, we could do that on the back end, whether it's through GFI content filtering or whether it's through the WatchGuard reputation monitor or something like that. We make it, we go and we implement something at a corporate level, at a network level, rather than individualistic on every single computer.
Right. And to be honest, Web of Trust is something managed on the computer, on the desktop, and the user can still bypass it if they want. So it just doesn't seem to be a good solution to me. Let's see. I got a quick story. I know we're getting close to an hour. I got a quick story. This had a client. So when you have a domain controller and Exchange on-premise, when you log into your domain account, you don't have to authenticate to Outlook, right? It authenticates.
You are correct, sir.
So when Outlook pops up asking for a password, something's wrong, right?
Correct.
So user has been having a problem for a few days that they keep getting prompted for the password in Outlook. And one of my techs was looking at it, so I didn't worry about it. But it's going on 2-3 days now. She's replied back today saying, hey, it's still happening. He was out on the job. He was actually out on the job with the cabling mess with the loop. So I looked at it to see why, and I found, well, first of all, here's the problem. The reason he didn't find it, what was going on, I showed him the custom event viewer to see every login attempt by that user. So he created a custom filter for this user, could see all the logins, no failed logins. Okay, so what's going on? The account is getting locked, but no failed logins. So I look at it, and of course, when I see account locked, there has to be a bad login, right? Has to be.
They just don't lock by themselves.
Not normally. I've never seen that. So I look in the router.
Is the place haunted by any chance?
Possibly.
Okay. Well, it's an option.
I'm not going to rule it out. I'm not going to rule it out. Not yet.
Some angry sysadmin ghost.
And I always recommend that it could be a ghost when people call me with problems. But so anyway, look in the router. Nothing blocked in the router. Nothing being logged is being or even allowed, right? Because I'm looking for anything coming through that's weird or bad to her. Because she does, okay, so she does have RDP open to her computer. And in the policy, it's from any external. It's not locked down. But I'm not seeing any traffic. I go back, look through logs again. I see an account lockout, caller computer name, free RDP. Have you been seeing, I don't know if y'all see this stuff, the free RDP?
Yes, I have seen that.
Yes. That's some kind of Linux RDP client that's actually trying to log in. It's not doing a port scan. It's actually trying to log in. So I'm thinking, well, if this thing's hitting the RDP policy, I should be seeing something in the router. I should be seeing some kind of failed logins. Even the Logic Now has that hacker check where it shows you how many bad logins.
Right.
That said zero. Okay, something's going on here. Go to group policy. Of course, you have to have account login events enabled to audit, and I go look at it, and it's only set to log successful login attempts.
We just need to see when it works, right? We don't want to see when it doesn't work.
That's bad stuff. I don't want to hear bad news. I only want to hear good news.
That's right.
So, and that's on by default. When you enable that policy, I believe they're both checked by default. So anyway, I had to check that. That explains why nothing was being logged. I disabled the policy for the RDP, enabled the VPN client, and as soon as I do all that, the account doesn't lock anymore, but then I can watch. Oh, and the WatchGuard policy was not set to log either. So any allowed packets were not being logged, and they were all allowed because there's nothing blocked. It's any external. So disable that, and I start watching streaming IPs. It would hit 10 times on one IP, then switch to another IP, then switch to another IP, all trying to get it to our computer. It was pretty cool. So, nothing being logged, no bad logins, no RDP allowed or denied packets. I don't know what happened, but it's all fixed now. And really, it should have been always set to require a VPN to RDP into the computer. That's just best practice. I'm not sure why that was set that way. But the event log helped because that custom filter that I mentioned a few years ago, I use it all the time now, and I can just easily filter by one user and see it. But all successful except the account all of a sudden locking out, and the free RDP was my only clue what was happening.
Very cool.
But I didn't call the client to tell them what was happening. Because I don't think that would look good for my tech. Now, my tech was on the road. When he got back, I told him what was happening. I said, now you call her because you've been working with her. You call her. Tell her what happened. Tell her we need to switch to mobile VPN client to connect. Because if I called her, that might, in her mind, she might think, well, I'm not working with him anymore. I'm going to work with Matt because he's the one who fixed it in the last issue, right? And I don't want to have that. So I'd rather him be the contact with her. When you have text that you have to manage, I want to build confidence between the customer and my guys. So now he can say, I fixed it. Here's a problem. Here's what we're going to do. So, because if I fixed everything, everyone would talk to me. I like to direct the guys if I need to, so they can build confidence with so the customer has more confidence in them to be able to talk to them, because I can't do everything myself. And I don't want to do everything myself. So he was happy. He says, oh, I got the credit. Yeah, you get the credit. Just finish it up. Do the VPN. Show her how to use it. And then we're good to go. So a little lesson if you have to manage other people. Right? I know a lot of people one-man shops, but if you're managing other techs, it's good to have your customers want to talk to them sometimes too, right?
Yeah. Episode 83 show notes. We'll have those queries for the logs.
The custom event log filter.
I use it all the time, especially one client who gets locked out constantly. Oh, the account lockout policy.
I got to remember to use those because that wouldn't have been the first thing I would have thought about. I mean, I would have thought about looking at the logs, but I wouldn't have thought about quickly making a custom event viewer.
Yeah, otherwise you got to browse to hundreds of thousands of entries, and it's not easy because you have to scroll down and look at the, click on one event, scroll down, look at the name. Oh, it's not that person. Next one. It's so much easier if you just do a filter and you know now all those login attempts are that user's. Very nice. Quick and easy.
Very nice. All right. Well, I think we've had another successfully jelly-packed show.
Marmalade.
I don't like jam. I don't like jam, jelly, or marmalade, so.
Marmalade. I thought you were talking about Christina Aguilera.
No, sorry.
Shyamalan, what is that?
Vegemite there, Rainey? A little Vegemite pack show?
Get that. There you go. That works. Well, I lived in Hawaii. How about poi?
Oh, there you go. Just a little spam on top. Spam pack show.
Poi stuff spam.
I'm just curious, anybody use the Google from last week? Just thought I'd check. I kind of forgot about it.
Oh, and we got no emails.
No.
Nobody took us up on our offer to see how many oodles you could go.
Maybe they just didn't get a chance to listen to the show yet.
It hasn't been posted yet.
Oh well, so my theory is correct. No one's listened to the show yet.
That's probably the reason why it has not been posted yet. It will be soon. So.
All right, so scratch the last 20 seconds of this show.
Nah, keep it in there for good measure.
We'll fix that in the editing. No, we won't.
No, we won't.
This is raw. It's raw footage.
Podness Pro uncut.
All right. Well, if you ever get to listen to the shows and you have any questions or feedback, you can email us at podnutspro@podnuts.com. And when you email us, it'll be a few weeks behind. So just
I'm a little old, so you may have to remind me what you're talking about.
I will have long forgotten these shows by the time they come out.
Please mention the show number and the topic.
Maybe. Do we have a beard? Is it long?
And
is it short?
Which one of us you laughed at the most?
Not at, with.
With, I'm sorry, with.
Or at. That works too.
All right. So, So the takeaway from tonight is it's free for a reason. And yes. The reason is usually not good.
That's right. For you anyway.
I think that's a great lesson just in life, just in general. If it's free, you may have to go to a doctor.
If you see candy in the street, leave it. It's not free candy.
Oh my.
That's an elf reference. Free. I don't know if you noticed that. It's an elf reference, right?
It's been a while since I've seen that.
Yeah, I don't like dealing with customers that want free or customers that want to buy everything themselves. We don't do DIY tech.
I like the this is what the cost, I'll get it. And they say, you know, you can get it cheaper here. I'm like,
it's never the same thing either. It's always something different.
Right.
Well, I've gotten around that by saying, because a lot of times now, well, there's two things. One is, I don't know if you've noticed, but a lot of the sites that were selling Microsoft licenses are now gone because Microsoft, whoever the State Department or whoever is in charge of all of that stuff, they've actually started shutting these companies down and suing. And so you can't get those gray market licenses anymore. And I've got a couple of customers that would go out and purchase them on their own, and they would not self-activate, but they would have to call in. And if you're willing to sit through 5 minutes or so on the phone and punch in all the codes, it would activate. That is no longer working.
Really?
So yeah, so I just tell my customers, look, don't try to go out and buy stuff on your own because you're going to waste your money. Because between the stuff not activating and, for instance, Sonic Wall, people would try to buy Sonic Walls off of, eBay or Amazon or whatever. And even if they buy it new, there's a deal called where it's actually gray listed and you can't buy services for it. So I tell them, yeah, you might be able to get it cheaper, but you won't be able to activate it. You won't be able to use the services. So if you get it from me, I am purchasing through authorized distributors and I know it's going to work.
Yeah,
and
same thing with WatchGuard. If I have a client with a WatchGuard, whatever, and they want to upgrade, you can get upgrade licensing, upgrade cost, but you've got to tell it, here's the other one I had, so basically you retire it,
right.
and that's marked as retired in WatchGuard system, so you can't add live security to it because it's already been retired.
Yep.
So you buy one that's refurbished or used, and you go to add security to it, nope, can't do it if it's been used for an upgrade price.
Yes.
So.
Yep. That's my deal registration. All of those are Sonic Walls. We're gonna, it's called secure upgrade for them. And so once you register the new one, the old one gets locked out. So, okay. All right. So, any last words before we sign off on the show here, besides free is free for a reason?
Well, just again, if you have any questions, comments, show ideas, topic request, we will entertain them possibly. Email us podnutspro@podnuts.com. We reserve the right to refuse any request.
No shoots, no shirt, no service.
No problem.
And our quote from Mr. Benjamin?
Oh. Today's quote is, "We are all born ignorant, but one must work hard to remain stupid." So, ladies and gentlemen, we thank you for listening and subscribing to the show. And even if you're a week or two behind, that's quite all right. Catch up in your podcatchers or podcasters or catchers, whatever they are. And we will be back here again soon. Everyone, have a good night.
Bye, guys.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.